From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who has been tasked with unearthing wrongdoing in the 2016 election, on Monday announced new charges against an attorney named Alex van der Zwaan. The attorney had worked for a law firm called Skadden, Arps, Slate, Mager & Flom, or Skadden for short. The charges against van der Zwaan involve false statements made about correspondence with Rick Gates, a former colleague of Donald Trump's one-time campaign manager, Paul Manafort. This new charge comes days after Mueller's team named a group of 13 Russian nationals charged with interfering in the U.S. election. President Trump, who Mueller is reportedly preparing to directly question, spent the weekend hate-tweeting up a storm over the charges against Russians. Trump repeated his favorite refrain of no collusion and alternated between targeting former President Obama and Congressman Adam Schiff. We turn now to our go-to guest on this issue, Kevin Gostola. He's a managing editor of Shadowproof.com. He also produces and co-hosts the weekly podcast Unauthorized Disclosure, and he closely follows these issues. Welcome back to the program, Kevin.
Thank you.
So the charges that Mueller announced on Monday morning that has now filled up the news headlines over this attorney that I'd never heard of, presumably you'd never heard of either, Alex van der Zwaan. Can you make sense of that? There's some connection with Rick Gates and Paul Manafort, but I'm not sure if there's a direct connection with Trump. How do you understand it?
Well, to me, it all seems to be a part of the business that was ongoing with Paul Manafort in Ukraine. And we've briefly talked about this on your show before when I appeared, talking about how Paul Manafort was actively defending people who were tied to Russia in Ukraine. And we know that the United States has been on the other side, being willing to support the Ukrainian resistance that was fighting Russian influence or Russian presence in the Ukraine. And we've been on the side of Ukrainian independence. So this seems to be something related to laws that this lawyer violated in the process of defending or working with Paul Manafort.
So essentially, Robert Mueller's team, as they dig, may come across people who perjure themselves and will throw out charges on the way to presumably finding some bigger picture issue. And this man was one of those people that seems to have perjured himself.
Yeah. And I'd say as far as this goes for Donald Trump, I'm not sure that, you know, Mueller's going to get too much out of this lawyer any more than, you know, you're going to get from Paul Manafort any more you're going to get from Rick Gates. So this is all about building a case that moves in the direction of the higher ranking official.
Is this also a warning, you think, from Mueller's team that if you lie, you too will get charged?
Well, I think that it sends a message that in putting together cases, in doing this investigation, any kind of criminal wrongdoing is going to be prosecuted. I mean, aside from the 13 nationals that were named in the indictment on February 16th, we've had isolated cases. Beyond this, there was one involving identity theft. And so Mueller has been bringing these cases, regardless of whether it fits into the narrative that the Democrats are pushing about Russian collusion.
So let's talk about the Russia charges, which were the ones that did make a lot of news. And different camps appear to be interpreting it in different ways, depending on, I suppose, your political persuasion and or party affiliation. So these 13 Russians, as far as you can tell, and three separate Russian entities were accused of meddling in the U.S. elections, but in which way? Through directly trying to hack into vote counting machines, or through polarizing fake news type posts and advertising, or both?
There's no allegation at all that any of these nationals were involved in hacking voting infrastructure, which is important. We know that there have been reports about at least 20 or so states being vulnerable and having seen people go into the systems. And so this is important. Nobody who was indicted by Mueller on February 16th had anything to do with changing vote tallies. They weren't hacking voting machines. What Mueller put out in this indictment, or what this indictment indicates, is that these 13 nationals allegedly were involved in an information warfare operation against the United States. Some of them traveled allegedly to the United States. They were present here. They visited states. They were studying. They were doing research. And then they wanted to, as the indictment suggests, sow discord among the population, and do so by setting up social media accounts on Twitter and through Facebook, and pushing things that were targeted towards issues that they knew were, for lack of a better term, hot button issues in the election, like immigration, issues related to Muslims, issues involving like Texas independence, or just basically playing to geographical disagreements, you know, where the South has their own set of political views that are very much different from Midwestern politics or New England politics. And so they were very deliberate, allegedly, if you read this indictment, and then they set up these operations so that they could act like they were involved in activist or grassroots organizations, and they could reach out to people who were in the United States and pose as other individuals, and then generate interest in whatever they were spreading about these topics.
Now, Kevin, it's hard to measure the impact of these types of actions, which is part of the problem, right? And certainly there's zero proof that Trump was somehow directing Russians to put forward these sorts of ads. These kinds of the kind of internet hoaxes that fuel anger, both on the right and the left, although more on the right than the left, make money for people. Do we know, as far as you can tell, that these actions that Mueller pinpoints were motivated by money or politics?
I don't think we can answer that question. But as far as how much of an impact it had on the outcome of the election, I would ask people who are listening or watching this interview to go back to 2016 and see if they remember anything like secured borders as a page or an account they were following, or Blacktivist. Were they following Blacktivist? Do they remember United Muslims of America? Do you remember any of these accounts that are named in the indictment as pushing content? Because frankly, when I was following the election very, very closely in 2016, the rise of Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton's campaign, the improbable rise of a reality TV show star, Donald Trump, I don't remember any of these accounts. And so, you know, my attitude generally and connected to this question is we were already going to have polarizing discussions about Black Lives Matter. We were already going to be debating whether we should deport or get rid of immigrants. I mean, Donald Trump was referring to them as Mexican rapists. So it was already polarizing and divisive. And, you know, as far as, you know, Texas independence, or whether we're talking about something related to whether Muslims should be in the country, we already had a right-wing media echo chamber pushing that the rise of Sharia law was coming. And you had Donald Trump talking very, very offensively about Muslims and their presence in the United States and wanting to ban them. So, you know, I think it's not that difficult to figure out how much impact these alleged, this alleged operation had on Americans. If anything, it just sweetened the sort of divisive rhetoric that was already present.
Now, the margins in certain states between Trump and Clinton was razor thin. So it is possible that certain of these memes and promotions of events may have pushed, or even just wild claims and fake news stories may have pushed certain people to vote one way or another. We may never know that. Do you feel, however, that it makes sense for Mueller to make these indictments against these 13 Russians? Certainly we can, and I want to discuss how Trump has reacted versus how Democrats are looking at these charges, but does it make sense for Mueller to make these charges?
Well, I think that in his job and his role as the special counsel, this is largely a political indictment, in my view, because these are crimes. These individuals are violating laws, but they're Russians, and the chance that they're going to be able to extradite these individuals to the U.S. and prosecute them are unlikely. So more than anything, it amplifies pressure. It's probably a way to try and persuade the Trump administration to institute sanctions. But I don't actually think that that we can say that those razor-thin margins that we had in those swing states or the purple states, even though these 13 Russian nationals allegedly had a strategy for purple states after they studied the United States, I don't know that we can say that they had the effect that people might think, because most of the people who ended up giving Trump the edge in those states were in poor white communities that didn't have a connection with the internet. And I think, you know, what we really have to be, what we're really talking about here when we get upset about this alleged operation and its impact is actually being upset about the right-wing media echo chamber, which you and I and many other people have been fighting for 20 and 30 years now. And it just, When you enlist Steve Bannon from Breitbart News, when you enlist some of these other people who are very good at what they do at creating discontent among people, they found in Donald Trump somebody who could give them really good results.
I'm so glad you made that point. Fox News and Breitbart do much worse damage than Russian bots might be able to do.
Yeah, and I think that so far, we've had a tendency to give Russia way too much credit when we really need to take stock of what's going on in this country and not only talk about the presence of Fox News and the impact and the presence of several sites, you know, not to mention Drudge Report and others that have done a fine job in the last 10 to 15 years of spreading a very, very inflammatory headlines. But let's also look at the money. I mean, Sheldon Adelson, let's look at Peter Thiel, let's look at people who are funding Trump. You know, Trump had his money to depend upon throughout the primary, and he made it a big deal about relying on his own funds. But then when it came to needing to beat Hillary Clinton, he had to go to other people, and he had to turn towards the businesses and other areas that, and these are big conservative players, and they're also very good at creating the same kind of discontent over issues as we say the Russians did.
Right. I mean, if we want to talk about meddling in election, this corporate and wealthy elites meddling in our elections every single time we have an election, it gets worse each time. Let's also talk about how the Democrats have been responding to this. Some have said that the Russiagate, as it's being called, is the left's version, I might argue the Democrats' version, of Benghazi, that flashpoint that the Republican Party jumped onto over the attacks in the Libyan city of Benghazi against the U.S. embassy, when they essentially tried to hype up an issue to politically attack President Obama and then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Is this the Democrats' Benghazi?
I've actually said that before, and it was many months ago. That was my view, that this seemed to be very hyped and also a way of not taking, I think I've said this before, I think it bears repeating, especially after this indictment, just because people have lost sight of the fact that Hillary Clinton's campaign was not a very good campaign, especially in 2016 when you had candidates like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump that were very appealing to voters. And that's not because they were men. That's not because they were white men either. It's because they were speaking in ways that were anti-establishment. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton was speaking in ways that appealed and or reassured the coalition of big businesses that she had been able to generate interest in her campaign among. And so I think one of the things that we really need to think about here is that as Democrats focus on Russia, what kind of campaigns are we going to see from them in the 2018 midterms? And how is what they do in 2018 going to be different than the 2016 election? Because thus far, everything points to a possible repeat of mistakes, ignoring the fact that we've had a surge in interest from young people and from new people stepping forward to run campaigns, whether they're endorsed by Our Revolution, which is Bernie Sanders' organization, or some other organization inspired them to step forward. We have hundreds upon hundreds of new people that are stepping forward to challenge in primaries. But I still think that, you know, what makes this a possible Democratic type Benghazi is that they keep beating at this without assessing the actual mistakes that they made that made it so someone like Trump, who, by the way, Hillary Clinton's campaign elevated, they elevated him and wanted to run against him. They thought he was a so-called Pied Piper candidate who was going to be divisive, and it ended up being something that they were not able to stay ahead of.
So in the end, rather than being the candidate they could beat, he became the candidate that that they couldn't win against, and of course, going against everyone's expectation, including Trump's own. I want to, because people are concerned about the fact that there are these paid armies of trolls online, I want to also tackle that issue, because we do have a very serious problem given the openness of the internet, in as much as it remains open, and the ease of putting out misinformation that polarizes people, how important it is for all of us, no matter where we fall on the political spectrum, to check our facts before we spread them on Facebook, to really become more internet savvy, to have that media literacy, which is something that, a term that, it's an old term that involved learning how to read corporate media critically, but now seems a term that is required to really assess all media critically. That seems to be, for me, the most important lesson coming out of the Russia troll factory story.
And I think that's a fair point, is that we need media literacy. It's not really something that is taught in schools. I believe that there are actually other, European nations or other places where you might be able to learn this while you're getting an education and going through school. But it's not something that happens in the U.S. And, you can say whether that's deliberate or not. It's hard to tell. I think simply put, we just don't know a lot about some of these accounts. And that's on Facebook or that's on Twitter. That's on these larger internet companies to say who is funding some of these things that are very inflammatory in the way that they're pushing, whatever. I know there's a lot of attention in the last week towards whether Russian bots were pushing a hashtag related to the Florida shooting in order to get people riled up. And I think that one of the things that we have to find a way to address as citizens is how we're able to detect when something is trying to divide us or when people are legitimately engaging in dissent. Because I do worry, I am concerned, that especially going into a 2018 midterms, when Democrats are going to be particularly focused on winning back at least one or two of the houses, that they're not going to like contentious primaries. They don't, they don't want Chelsea Manning running against Ben Cardin, for an example. They don't like that kind of a thing because it forces them to field challenges from the left. They hate fielding challenges from the left, as seen by Sanders versus Clinton in the 2016 election. And so I believe that we have to guard against the Democrats that are going to try to label dissent as possibly coming from Russian bots, as possibly coming from outside forces, because some of that's going to be genuine. But I think also we need to be mindful that some of it's going to be generated from outside of the country, generated from maybe even like hacker collectives that we don't know, generated from alt-right parts that have money, that have lots of funds to use to whip up discontent. And so I think it's a really difficult thing, and it maybe makes independent media more important than ever.
Right. Kevin, what about Trump's own reaction? You know, it's the defensive posture that he takes toward the Mueller investigation only serves to, of course, make him look guilty of something. I mean, he seems to blunder, have one blunder after another. Every statement he makes, every firing he contemplates in retaliation, and it's tempting for those of us on the left, and just tempting for Trump critics in general, to see Trump unravel on Twitter and say, no collusion, no collusion, reminding us of Nixon saying that he was not a crooked man. And you know, for him to accuse everybody but himself, Obama was soft on Russia, he's much tougher on Russia, Adam Schiff is lying, etc. So what do we take from Trump's posturing over the Mueller investigation? Clearly, Mueller scares him, and Mueller does want to interview him directly. And Trump probably knows he's not going to be able to keep his lies and truth straight when he speaks with Mueller. What do you make of that?
Well, my interpretation is that he does not like that this investigation continues and hangs over as a cloud over his administration. And he wants it to go away. Now, why reacting in the way he is, why he thinks that actually is going to get rid of the cloud, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot about Donald Trump that we would chalk up to ego. And my belief is that a lot of this is that he does not appreciate the challenge, that he does not want somebody questioning his integrity.
Right. He doesn't have experience with political office. He has experience in the corporate world, and you do things quite differently when you're in political office. You have to be a lot more accountable than you do when you're in the corporate world.
Well, yes. And I think we can make a comment on corporate culture here more generally about Trump that actually relates to the way Trump is reacting so viscerally to Robert Mueller, because we've seen Scott Pruitt won't take anything but first class flights because he doesn't want to meet people who yell at him about the environment. And we've seen that Rex Tillerson, heading up the State Department, doesn't want to give interviews to the press and wants to just keep quiet about everything. So these people naturally, and all the way up to Trump, do not believe that they should be held accountable by anyone but shareholders, really. I mean, the people who own them, the people who give them money, those are the only people they want to respond to. And so in this sense, the fact that Robert Mueller continues to do this investigation and it hasn't ended, they just cast aspersions on it and suggest that it's part of some kind of conspiracy within the FBI against them, which creates this very odd situation where you've got the FBI that has a lot of Republicans within it, cast as this Democratic left-wing institution that's trying to bring down Trump's administration. It sends us into a kind of Twilight Zone type of situation that doesn't make any sense. And I believe that, you know, I don't see any evidence so far that any of this reaches all the way up to Donald Trump. But I do see Donald Trump making the same sort of mistakes and blunders that Richard Nixon was willing to make back in the 1970s or allowed himself to make in the 1970s that ended up eventually bringing him down and leading to his resignation. And so it seems like he's just so offended that somebody would challenge him that it could be his own undoing.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you so much for joining us. As always, is shadowproof.com the best place to read your work?
Yes.
We'll post a link to that from our website later. Thanks as always, Kevin. Kevin Gostola is the managing editor of shadowproof.com. He also produces and co-hosts the weekly podcast Unauthorized Disclosure. We've been trying to make sense of the latest charges from Robert Mueller's legal team. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.